You're listening to TFM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there.
Hey, everyone. I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Taking all these books?
I thought I'd take some light reading in case I got bored.
Hello and welcome to Literary Treks, TFM's books and comics show, all about the books and comics of Star Trek. I am but one of your hosts, Casey Pettit, and with me, as he always is Jonathan Cohn. Jonathan, it's another book month.
Yes, we have, not only do we have a book to review, we have comics, we have news of new stuff coming out. It's we got quite a lot to cover on this episode.
Yeah, and with that, I will get right into telling our listeners how to get in touch with us, because we do have a lot to talk about today. You can find all our shows by going to our website, trek.fm. Follow us on X and Instagram at trekfm. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And while you're there, join our listeners only group, the Babel Conference. Just go to Facebook search field, type B-A-B-E-L, and it should come right up. We also have a dedicated Goodreads group for Literary Treks. Join us there, and you can see all the books we've read and even what's coming up next. And if you'd like to support the network, please go to patreon.com/trekfm, where you can select from any number of tiers. And if you have a show you really enjoy, such as Literary Treks, you can be an associate producer like myself and Greg Rosier are for Literary Treks. And lastly, please leave us a star rating and a written review wherever you get your podcasts. It's great for us. We love the feedback, but it also helps others find the show. So, Jonathan, we have a little bit of book news, new book news, one that we've kind of already talked about maybe a little bit, but now we've got more.
Yes, we had learned about that there was a new Strange New Worlds book, Ring of Fire, by David Mack. We had known that it was coming out in August 26th specifically, but we now have a summary, a blurb, if you will, and I will read that for us and hopefully not butcher it. When murder and sabotage imperil the time-sensitive and top-secret mission of a team of civilian scientists, Starfleet deploys Captain Christopher Pike and the Enterprise crew to Kathara Station, a classified research facility located above the accretion disk of a black hole. Lieutenant Commander Una Chin Riley soon discovers the station's director, Vulkea, who many years earlier visited this same black hole on a mission that went tragically wrong and whose consequences have haunted him ever since. Caught in the crossfire on the station are Science Officer Spock, Nurse Christine Chapel, and Security Chief Laan Noonien Singh, whose romantic entanglements, old and new, threaten to unravel their bonds of friendship. As enemies converge upon the station, can Vulkea and Pike both atone for the mistakes of their pasts in time to avert a tragedy? With time running out, the survival of Kathara Station, the USS Enterprise, and dozens of innocent lives hinges on their acts of contrition.
Ooh, acts of contrition. That's a Voyager book.
that's a book. Yeah. I don't know if you do this when we're reading a book, but if I'm ever reading especially a Star Trek book, and I just see a turn of phrase that happens to be a title of another book, I'm like, it's a reference to that book.
Yeah, I feel like the books we're reading now too have all those for the seventh book of the series, but we'll get into that. Anybody who follows David Mack on Facebook, though, you know, got to follow along with his writing process for this. So it's pretty exciting to, you know, having watched his, you know, kind of little updates from time to time, and then, you know, finally get the announcement of the cover blurb and even, you know, a photo of the cover as well. Which I feel like with these Strange New Worlds books, it's always just the cast on the front and something behind. And
it's the cast and it's a black hole or it's a star or it's a nebula, whatever. Yeah, there's a very specific style. And when you look at each era of Star Trek publishing, you can tell like the 80s books had a very specific style. And the 90s books had a very specific style. And even these, you know, the Gateways books have a very specific art style. I'm particularly partial to maybe it's just because I'm partial to the era itself, but the 2000s and 2010s covers of the post-Nemesis stuff, that's the covers I really like. But, you know, this one, it's well put together.
Yeah, I think it's, kind of just right in line with the other ones that have come out, like Una McCormick's recent one, Asylum, and I think even the one that's coming up next month as we're recording this, Towards the Night by James Swallow, has kind of a similar cover. Yeah. It's got some of the cast on it, and
it does.
And kind of some designs behind there, so... maybe they're not allowed to show the ship. I don't remember seeing the ship on this one. I don't know. But it's, you know, either way, it's very, very cool. And, you know, I think for people who are fans of the show, it's good to, you know, especially when we're in this period right now, we're kind of between seasons of Strange New Worlds, you know, getting to see the characters, you know, on the cover rather than some artist rendering of them or something that just isn't going to grab somebody's attention like a current cast photo or similar kind of to a cast photo. So, but yeah, always exciting. And, you know, David Mack, he knows how to write a novel. So, you know, we'll, definitely look forward to this one coming out later this year. And actually comes out the day after my birthday. So happy birthday to me.
Oh, nice. Well, I can put on my there calendar you when your birthday is.
And a tidbit for people. Now you just have to figure out the year. So we also have some comics news. I think, you know, we've been a little bit off and on our comics coverage. We're starting to pick things back up. But we just got news from IDW that they will be discontinuing the current running of the Star Trek and the Defiant comic lines and starting some new series. I don't know about any of the other ones. I think we've really only had those are really the two ongoing ones, and then we got Lower Decks that kind of just restarted, I guess, you know, there. But so I can't recall if they're gonna stop with Lower Decks or if they'll continue that one. I assume they'll continue that one, but for now we've got some. In June of 2025 will be the final issues of Star Trek and Star Trek Defiant, kind of closing the storylines for those. And I should have pulled this up, but I think it's called Omega, which would be apropos to the stories so far with the gods storylines and everything. Yep. So, but yeah, I think, you know, starting in July, we'll get some new series.
Yeah, and I see that one of the new series is titled Red Shirts. And my question is John Scalzi writing?
I don't think so. That would be pretty good, though.
That would be synergy there. No, Red Shirts, which should be fun. I don't believe that's going to be like quite like the ongoing ones. It's probably going to be a limited run.
I believe you're right. All new heart-rending Star Trek 5-issue miniseries.
Ah,
there you go.
I was right. We also have Strange New Worlds, The Seeds of Salvation, which is coming in August. And is that one also a limited run?
That one. Yes. I don't know how many issues, but yes, that one's also a limited run. Yes.
And then we have one that also has to be limited run is Voyager Homecoming. Another look at that epic finale. No, that's not the finale. It's
Christy Golden book that came out after Endgame. Yeah, so I'm kind of curious about that.
That's interesting. I wonder if they're going to like faithfully adapt it, or they're going to be like, this is a different version.
I think it's
of
a different version. Just kind of looking on StarTrek.com about this. It's also a limited 5-issue series. And it mentions nothing about Christy Golden's book. It's just that the Captain Janeway and the crew of the USS Voyager are back for one final mission before they head home. So it picks up moments after the final shot of the series. So it's obviously going to be
interesting.
You know, an original story. And I mean, geez, when was the last time we had a Voyager comic outside of even like, I guess we've had characters show up in, you know, Defiant and Star Trek, and then it's not the same. Yeah. And so this will be really interesting. But yeah, these come after it is called Star Trek Omega, and it's going to be the. Let's see. This exciting trio of new limited series, this is from StarTrek.com, comes as Star Trek Omega approaches, an oversized one-shot, which is the denouement of critically acclaimed Star Trek and Star Trek Defiant storylines. And, yeah, and that'll come in June, so that'll be interesting. We'll get caught up on those storylines over the next couple of Literary Treks episodes, so we can hit that finale before we get into these new limited series. But yeah, kind of interesting how they have taken both the Star Trek storyline and the Defiant storyline as far as they have. And, you know, you and I have kind of been a little bit that there's it's had its ups and downs, and you know, even you know, when Matthew was on, it was some of the storylines are not too bad, and then you get some other ones here, you're like, yeah, we didn't need some of these. So I'll be curious how they end it, because I think where we left was it Defiant or was it the Theseus, they went to fluidic space. So
that's right,
it'll be interesting to get back into those. I think we've got a couple. We might have one mini series, like mini arc each, before we get to this Star Trek Omega. So we'll catch up on those next time. But this time we've got some Lower Decks comics that we've read.
Yeah. I read those today, and they are very silly, very, very fun, very Lower Decks-y. I did like how when they go back, they show Captain's Log from Kirk. It's in the art style of the animated series. I thought that was genius. That was delightfully genius. Yeah. I liked that. I did like the opening of this comic, how it starts with them just showing different episode titles and be like, all right, we've got a mission. Oh, no, we got it. It was so easy, misunderstanding. Yeah. We got it. And it's like, all right, I got another mission. Nope, we got it. And I was like, this is hilarious. I like it. And they didn't run the joke too long. They cut it off right when it needed to be. So I liked that. And I don't know about you, but like the first issue, despite the fact that it technically ended on a cliffhanger, felt like it was its own thing. And then the second issue, despite the fact that it started, you know, picked up, and then it felt like its own thing, but 3 and 4 felt intricately like a part 1 and part 2. And I just thought that was weird pacing. The first two had made me think, all right, this is going to be a largely standalone comic series. And then when I got to part 3, and I did not feel closure at all, and part 4 really didn't feel like closure, I was like, okay, that's a weird.
Yeah, it's weird having. Yeah, especially for something like Lower Decks, which is so episodic anyway, to have it have kind of some arcs. And we've had some Lower Decks comics before. Like we had, I don't know, 3 or 4 issues where, you know, they brought Dracula to life in the holodeck. He was kind of a Moriarty type character. And, they had some fun with that character.
I have to say the callback to Dracula where they said, he's over with, who they said he was with, another horror character, but they say, they're having public domain Avengers over there. Again, that's a joke that's like not an in-universe joke, but it's hilarious.
And I think that one was also in that first issue, which I felt like it was, of the four that we're starting with, I feel like the first one was probably the strongest, just because we're kind of resetting our Lower Decks comic timeline, I guess. I don't know. Even though, like, they made reference to the previous comics, they even made reference, like, kind of a little bit of a fourth wall break, like, how referencing that this is also issue one, even though they've already done an issue one, which, you know, I was sitting there thinking, like, why are we still, but, you know, whatever. And so, like, that was a, you know, pretty fun moment, but I agree, like, issues 3 and 4, definitely had this, kind of continuity to them that I guess we haven't really had with Lord X as much, you know. Like, I mean, I guess in the last season of the actual show we did, but it feels like it should be more standalone. So, and I guess that issue two was interesting because that's when you were talking about that had the kind of captain's log from the animated series Kirk, and not like it was great too because they even referenced the fact that they're like kind of doing they basically summarized an entire animated series episode, you know, in like, you know, five panels or whatever, but you know, but right, they're like, yeah, why is he standing so close to the camera? And oh, how'd they get that shot? And how'd they, you know, do this? And like, oh, they're editing these, their logs together.
Yes, that was hilarious.
And then they're all starting to record their logs and everything. But
exactly,
you know, it was the actual story of that one I didn't care as much for. I mean, it was kind of fun having like some of the other characters like Jadzia and, Picard and Janeway, and Picard from before he, or it was, I can't remember how they describe it, but basically early, or like right, early Picard. Early Picard.
Like, yeah, grumpier Picard. I love that too. I was like, that's a very, it's like, that was very, it's oddly specific, but okay, yeah. I guess we're getting early Picard.
And just the callback even to, it wasn't the Metrons, it was, Excalibans, something. Yeah, from the episode where they brought back Abraham Lincoln, and they even referenced that. Like, just like a lot of really good callbacks, which is what we kind of want from Lower Decks. Mm-hmm. I will say the little kind of footnotes at the bottom of the page can be pretty funny, but I feel like it's getting a little overdone in the original run for their Lower Decks comics. They did it in a handful of places, and maybe if I went back and looked at them, I'd see there was maybe a lot more, but like it was also just kind of a new thing that they did because, you know, other comics aren't really doing that kind of thing, and they were fun little quips, you know, especially as you got through the comic. But it was like every few pages, you know, every five pages or so, like here it's on almost every page, and like I'll get to the point where I turn the page and then I'm like, oh wait, I didn't read the bottom, and it's like, oh, there wasn't one. Like,
and it was so small, I had to like
when you're reading it on the, like, you know, digitally, it's kind of hard to see. But and you know, some were better than others. Like there are some that were just like, okay, that was a good, you know, good reference or whatever. But other times it was just like, you know, sometimes it was in the voice of like the Excalibans or one of the characters in the story. Other times it was in the voice of the author of the comic, and so it was a little
There was a reference to capitalism. Funny,
some of them were very good, but I feel like it was overdone.
They
should pick and choose those, but you know, it's still, I still like having those for the Lower Decks comics. But
yeah.
Overall, I mean, you know, some pretty, I'd say as from some of the comics that we've read over the years, this was a pretty strong start for a series. This is one of the first series that you got to start from the beginning, I think.
Hey, yeah. I also got to start the Sons of Star Trek, but that was like three or four.
Yeah,
that
was another
issues.
Limited run one. So.
So no, this is it's funny. If you're going into it wanting it to be just funny and silly, you're gonna have a fun time. If you're wanting, you know, this epic, you know, serious take, you're gonna be disappointed. But if you're going in with funny, you're gonna be happy.
And this is probably more family friendly than the show is.
Oh yeah. Well, except now this is like a pet peeve of mine, but they bleep out the foul language, but just by using like random like symbols and stuff. And I get why they do it, because they want to be edgy, and also because they want to not, you know, use the actual word and have it bumped up a level in terms of appropriateness and stuff. So I understand from a production level why they do it. But me personally, I do not appreciate it, because I'm like, guys, you may as well, like, I don't appreciate swearing, but you may as well do it. Like, you're not, you're the intent is still there. It doesn't change. Like, it's not like a, oh, well, we're better off because we didn't actually say it. It's like, but you meant it.
Well, it's kind of like some of the stuff in the Picard's Academy ones. I remember there was some very adult things happening in that comic. I can't even remember off the top of my head, but I think that there was some light cursing that wasn't bleeped out, if I remember correctly, but I think there was just some adult themes in that one that, and I'm just, you know, like I appreciate that kind of humor myself, but like, yeah, I also appreciate that some people don't, and especially for a comic book that, I don't want to say that they're geared towards kids, but you know, like the kind of, especially the animation style in the Lower Decks, but, you know, some of those types of things, like, I feel like they should be kind of careful, you know, where they go, like, cause there's a way they could do even Lower Decks that has bleeps and stuff on the show, but without taking it too far.
Right.
But it's still, yeah, it's still fun. And one of the things I was actually just thinking too, is on the artwork on these, one of the things I appreciated actually more about issues 3 and 4 was the art was clearly different. It was and I didn't actually look to see who did the artwork or anything, but it was clearly drawn by somebody not just doing an exact copy of what's on the show. More, I mean, they still look like the characters and everything, but it wasn't this like perfect copy of, you know, Star Trek Lower Decks or whatever, and so it just made it feel a little bit more artistic and you know, kind of like when we've read some of the well, even some of the Star Trek or the Defiant ones, the characters are almost like they've traced them from images or whatever, and which is kind of a similar thing for the Lower Decks ones. For the first couple issues, it seemed like they traced from images from the show, but the second couple issues 3 and 4 felt more artistic to me, not in a we've taken this in a wild direction, you're not going to recognize the characters, but just in a nice, like, somebody actually took some time to like hand draw,
stylized.
Yeah,
I'm gonna be totally honest, didn't notice at all.
It was just jarring for me when I got into issue 3 and I was like, oh, Captain Freeman looks a little different. Well, I guess they all look just a little bit different.
Interesting. Yes,
but no, I mean, I think it'll be interesting. Like, I know that there's more issues coming because we had a little bit of a to be continued or just kind of some teasers for the next issue. So we'll get back into Lower Decks after we get through some of the Star Trek and Defiant ones. But we'll come back and do another few issues in a few months. But hopefully people like that. And they'll keep making them for the people that do. Well, and we have one more piece of news. It's a bit of sad news here that on March 16th, 2025, we lost Margaret Clark, who was one of the probably more prolific Star Trek editors that we had at Pocket Books. I mean, she was, you know, up in there with John Ordover and Marco Palmieri and some of the other ones. But we learned about that, I think, probably both of us, mostly through Facebook with the various authors that we follow.
Yeah, it was very, very sad news to hear. She was, I believe it was 69 years old about. She'd been the editor of the Star Trek books for quite a while. I believe she started in charge of the novels themselves in the 2000s, working with Ordover and Palmieri. And then she, I think around like 2008, took sole control of it. And she's been the sole editor pretty much. I know she works with Ed Schlesinger. But I think she's the actual editor on stuff. And so she's edited, you know, for over 20 plus years. Well, that's looking at between 150 and maybe 200 Star Trek novels. That's a lot of books that she's edited. She's got quite a legacy. And, it was very sad to hear this news, but, you and I never got to talk with, Margaret, but she actually did come on Literary Treks once. She was on episode 48, Tell Me a Good Story. Chris and Matthew talked to her. So if you want to, you know, honor her and listen to an interview she did with Literary Treks back in the day, you can check out that episode.
Yeah, for sure. That's from all the way back in 2014. So it's quite a long time ago, but yeah,
And she had been editing at that point. She had already been editing for quite a while. And that was 11 years ago now.
Well, and, you know, just, you know, looking at David Mack, you know, his post on Facebook about kind of how he, you know, was working with her when he was writing Star Trek Destiny and just the ideas that she brought to the table, and Dayton Ward and Jackson Miller, and trying to think, Greg Cox. You know, a lot of the authors, a lot of the current authors, but even, you know, some of the you know, older, in air quotes, authors who, you know, been around for a while and knew her for a long time, wrote really nice things. So definitely, you know, if you've got a favorite Star Trek author, go check out, you know, kind of their words about Margaret and stories. It was just really, really touching. And, you know, just, I don't think it's kind of like movie producers and stuff. You know, we don't really think about the editors as much as the authors when we're right. reading these books. And to find that, you know, her fingerprints are all over the Star Trek books. You know, a lot of the stuff that we know and love about Star Trek books over the last 20 plus years have had a huge push from Margaret to make happen and to make good. You know, like, and we've gotten a lot of really good books.
I was talking with someone and I was saying, you know, I'd never met Margaret, but you think about it, my favorite Star Trek book series, like the Prey trilogy, the Fall, the Destiny series, the Coda trilogy, all of those, Typhon Pact, all of those were shepherded by Margaret Clark. She was the editor on all of them. So it just shows just the incredible legacy that she's left with the franchise.
Yeah. So she will be missed. And, you know, I know that the authors, especially who worked with her, will. And we will. I honestly, since we heard this news, like, each Star Trek book that I pick up, I look in the back to see the acknowledgments, because they always talk about the editors back there. And even the one we're going to talk about today, like, you know, it was kind of earlier in her Star Trek career, but her name is in the back of it. I mean, just like her legacy goes back for a while. So, yeah, but, you know, she'll be missed, but she's got a great legacy. So,
yeah.
Well, and with that, why don't we open this door and get into some chaos? Well, we're back once again to talk about the Gateways series, and this time we are talking about Star Trek The Next Generation, Gateways Book 3 of 7, Doors into Chaos by Robert Greenberger, which came out later in 2001. I can't talk. I'm like, this is how old this book is. And I feel like we finally got the beginning of the Gateways series.
Yes. So you and I had talked a little bit off camera about this, but like I had kind of been demoralized because I admit I was the one that picked the Gateways series for us to do
next.
I'm
not pointing fingers.
And I was feeling so bad about it.
Not pointing fingers.
Yeah, you know, I am. I had personally picked the Gateway series, and so after we read the first two books, I thought, man, I picked such a mid series, and we've got 7 books, and so I was just so down, and I was like, all right, I'll pick up the next one. I don't know what it's going to be, and in my mind, I thought, well, if anyone's going to have the main story, hopefully it'll be Robert Greenberger, since he co-created the series. So I was hopeful that this one would be great, and basically 1.5 chapters in, I was like, I'm sold. This is the book we needed. I pretty much knew, and I messaged you 2 chapters once I finished chapter 2, which is a lot of the book because the book has really long chapters.
Yeah, it does.
But after chapter 2, I said, "Oh, we're in it now. This is what we were hoping for with the series." And maybe that is just me being a little bit personal style, because this book features more of the political thriller style that we are accustomed to in a lot of modern Trek, whereas the first two books in the series are more the deep space exploration episodic stuff that you would see in the original series or in the early parts of Next Gen. And so maybe that's why this works so well, but just everything about this book just worked for me. And so I was so happy the whole time. I had a grin on my face the whole time, and I was like, I'm back.
Yeah, you texted me, I think. I was about in the same place as you were when you texted me, because I was thinking the same thing. Like, yes, this this is what we've been waiting for. And honestly, like, this is where I knew, like, you know, I said early on, like, you know, when we were talking about the first book, that I've read this series before, but I read it probably 20 plus years ago now, like closer to when it came out. So the only thing that I really, and still the only thing I really remembered about it was the Iconians, you know, that's mm-hmm. who built the gateways, like that's the gateways we were talking about. And I was almost a little disappointed in the first two books that we didn't get any mention of the Iconians, because it's not like they were this yep. secret race. I mean, Picard studied their history. They were mm-hmm. just an ancient race that were gone forever. But, you know, in the first book yep. we had, I think it was the Kalandans. And like that, you know, kind of follow on to the original series episode. And then I honestly can't remember who the alien race was in the second one. But once we got here, and it just starts right off, the Iconians called and they want to sell their technology. You know, it's like, okay, cool. We're yep. kind of in the story proper now, and we can talk about this. And I think the thing that really captured my attention or my interest in this was the fact that they reveal early on, like, what's going on as far as the Iconians are here. They've turned on the Gateways network and they're, you know, like negotiating to sell it. But we're getting throughout the book you know, it's not like it's, I mean, it's kind of peppered in. It's not like we had like a prologue that we didn't come back to, you know, for right. half the book or anything. Like, peppered throughout the book are these just little vignettes into, and kind of like Easter eggy type of scenes sometimes with some of the alien sort of, but just kind of the havoc that it's causing with people just accidentally going through gateways. Like, one of them was a group of school children on basically a field trip that get caught going through gateway. Yeah. And I don't think we actually got resolution mm-hmm. to that in this book. You know, like you know, we're finding out throughout this book, like, that, I mean, this book's called Doors into Chaos for a reason. And
exactly.
Just the setup of that, to me, this is kind of like almost like a Star Trek book you'd see in this, you know, in the post Nemesis era, even though this is between Insurrection and Nemesis, but like getting that setup of mm-hmm. just like, there is this galactic catastrophe happening and we need to figure out how to stop it.
Yes. There is an electric pace and feeling to the book. Despite the fact that it has ridiculously long mm-hmm. chapters, it feels like it's moving. That first chapter has, I believe, three different examples. It's the school children example, it's the two races that are fighting mm-hmm. example, and then it's the guys that take that invade Nog's ship. Yeah. Is it Nog? The Grand Nangus, Rom, whatever. Or is it Rom?
Yeah, Rom.
Yeah, the Grand Nangus' ship. And so, like, each of those is like, all right, stuff's happening. It's chaotic. The gateways are opening. And we kind of, because we've been part of the series, we kind of knew what was happening. And then Picard is called back and we get another briefing, which, yeah, maybe other people don't like this. I loved the briefings. I loved seeing them sit around and be like, all right, this is the game plan. This is what the plan is. And they're like, all right, Picard, you are going to go and get a bunch of diplomats together and maybe get some ships from them. And you're going to basically take an armada to meet the Iconians. And I was like, ooh. And they said, oh, but we were going to the Klingons first. I was like, oh, we got to see the Klingons. Yes. Okay. I'm all for this. And it's like, it's recognizable races. It's recognizable. It's easy to picture. You know, everything about this book just felt like post Nemesis continuity. Like, it felt like it had that kind of tone to it. And so it was familiar. The first book, I mean, if you've watched the TV show episode, you're kind of familiar with what's going on in it, but really it was not quite mm-hmm. as familiar. And the second book is like totally original, totally different. So I liked that familiar feeling that we had with the plan. And then you had, you know, we basically had three different plot lines we were following. You had Picard, who's going to get all the people and all the ships and stuff. And then you also, at the same time, have Troy, who's going, and she, even though she's like the second in command on this other ship, yeah, you know, she's going to be in command at some point on it. And then you have Riker, who has the Enterprise, which I don't know how plausible it is that they'd be like, oh yeah, we're going to ferry Jean-Luc back to headquarters, and then we're going to take him off his own ship and send it into the middle of danger. This is a little implausible. This is me going, I feel like it'd be reverse. I feel like they would give Will Riker the new ship, and they'd be like, Jean-Luc, you take the most expensive asset we have, the big kahuna ship. You take the Enterprise to the next thing. And your first officer, Will Riker, he'll command this tiny little ship instead. I can overlook that personally.
Yeah. And I mean, it was weird because, I mean, even Picard, I guess, thought it was weird when it happened. He was like, wait, you're sending my ship away? And you can almost see... since we know, because we finally got, you know, we complained in the first couple books that, I mean, we kind of knew where, if you read the New Earth books, you kind of know where the Challenger book takes place in the universe or in the timeline. But again, without really, you know, going on a memory alpha or, you know, something and looking up where the first one takes place, you're kind of in the dark. This one we get like their historian's note and, you know, it gets placed, after the Voyager episode Pathfinder, and we get some information throughout the book that it's a year after the events of Insurrection, and there's some callbacks to Insurrection, which is actually pretty nice. And I can't remember how much time takes place before Nemesis, but part of me wonders though if giving Riker the Enterprise, because he's being sent off to go help mediate the Deltons and the Carrion, you know, and their kind of desire for this planet since they got transported there. You could almost see it as kind of a trial run because, you know, we know at the beginning of Nemesis that that Riker gets promoted to captain. He's going to get his own ship. And, you know, I almost wonder if that – I don't think anything's going to come of this, but I could see this as kind of Starfleet's way of going like, well, let's give him a mission that's – a little bit of a softball, but something that's also not, you know, we're in the middle of a crisis, you know, like to see how he does before we send him off on the Titan, which is going to go explore, you know, the far reaches of the galaxy or whatever. But,
and by the way, kudos for the authors for like Greenberger for getting super lucky, because Nemesis is not out yet. This is 2001 that this book comes out. Nemesis came out in 02. So, and usually they're very tight on production, unless you're like doing the novelization. Yeah. They're not telling you what's going on with the movies usually with these types of things. So I can imagine they didn't know that Riker was getting that he was getting a command. So, you know, that's perfect synergy. Maybe Ordover knew. And so he may
I bet you're right though. Not. Cause Nemesis came out in December of 02, which means they were probably shooting it late in I mean, this book would have been
probably shooting it then.
Yeah. By the time this book came out, which means this book was written way longer before.
So they probably had no idea
What was going to happen. Because, I mean, in here we get, you know, like Worf is still...
But it worked out well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it fits pretty well between the movies, I feel like. And we get, you know, Picard goes to Kronos and, you know, to meet with Martok and picks up Worf along the way. So this is just yet another way that Worf is going on an adventure on the Enterprise.
Worf is not doing his job. Yeah.
but it was like... It was good having him here. Like Worf was used very well throughout the book, in both his capacity. Well, and mostly in his capacity as ambassador, because like when we're getting his point of view of stuff, like he's fighting himself not to just jump into the action and start, you know, giving orders on like tactical issues and things like that. Like he's really trying to stay back. Like I'm an ambassador. I'm just an observer until I'm asked. And even Picard's like, hey, he's just, I know that if Worf had something to say, he would say it. Otherwise, you know, like I'm going to not rely on like, just go back to my old habits and rely on Worf. So, but it was just good. Even though we like split up the crew with, you know, Picard and Worf on one ship, Troy on another, and the rest of everybody else, you know, on the Enterprise, it's still worked as a cohesive next generation story. I didn't care as much for the Troy parts just because
I would agree.
It it wasn't, it didn't really add a lot. And I honestly, at the top of my head, I can't remember who it was that she went to go visit to recruit. Oh, the Ferengi, I guess.
Troy, yeah, the Ferengi. She went to the Ferengi, and she went to, I think it was the Tholians.
Oh, yeah. Who said no.
I think she visited the Tholians. Who said no. But the reason her story, I think, didn't work as well as, for one, because she was the one that kept getting said no to, yeah, but also because there was a lot more character stuff going on, because there were like some people on her ship who were like the, you know, the bridge crew who were having some their own kind of little story going on. And I was like, you know, that was one part of the book. I was like, I just don't care about that. Yeah. I'm here for Troy and I'm here for the main stuff. And also she had a weird connection with the captain of the ship.
She was the captain of that ship, though, because they were calling her Captain Troy and stuff. But
that was in the second half of the book.
Oh,
though.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the first half of the book, there is a captain who gets incapacitated.
Oh, I forgot about that.
yeah. But so, yeah, I agree. Her story was the weakest. I liked Picard's the best, personally, because I was so excited. I was like, oh, we're getting to see Martok. Oh, we're getting to see Worf. Oh, and I loved getting those Klingon ships, and they're just chomping at the bit the whole time, and it just becomes like a joke. Like, they're like, all right, we're going to go. All right.
I think that, the Klingons were used very well, and then I feel like nothing was, well, all the races that were used very well. And I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I feel like, the stuff with Troy and on that ship, the necessity of it, I could see, would be just that, oh, we can't just send Picard out. I mean, like, we even got word that, you know, Admiral Ross was out there. Yep. He was going to go meet with the Romulans, which ended up not needing to happen. And then, so we know that there were other ships going around, but I don't feel like any of the scenes with, like, her and Rom were needed, or Leeta, you know, like, like that whole scene, it was just... it kind of seemed just like a fantasy, you know, her showing up naked to the Grand Nagus and everything. When they're allies, and we knew that they would have sent a ship anyway, but like all of the races that were used, even the ones that were like the Deltans and the Carrion, who were at odds with each other. I mean, they were fighting with the Enterprise for a while, but then once they got overpowered, then they were like, okay, we'll join. And, you know, the Gorn acted just like we thought that they would, you know, like kind of, they joined.
I did like the Gorn. That was fun.
And so, like, but it wasn't overused. Like, they didn't, dwell on anything like that. Like, I'm glad that we didn't have really any specifically Gorn scenes that I can remember with, like, crazy names and stuff like that. Like,
no,
I think that was one thing that helped with the, pacing of the book. That was like, the names that he picked for the characters were all pretty easily pronounceable. You know, like we get a lot of races where the names have a lot of apostrophes or no vowels or, you know, whatever it is.
Or a lot of SHs.
And this one was...
It didn't have that.
Yeah, it was just like, let's get their name and let's go on with the story.
And none of the scenes were too long. None of them overstayed their welcome. Pretty much, I believe, every single planet... like that they visit to grab people was like a one and done scene.
Mm-hmm.
And so that helped move it along quite quickly. But then you had the Riker storyline, which we haven't really talked. You kind of mentioned with the Deltans and the Carrions, which first of all, again, Carrion, like I kept pronouncing it like your Carrion baggage.
Yeah.
That was just mean. But I was reading it, and you're at the scene where they're like getting ready to shoot at each other. And then he sends his ship right in the middle. And it's like, no, don't like, he's trying to be like, all right, if we're in the middle, they won't shoot at each other. And then he's dead wrong. And they keep shooting. And so he's like, fine, shoot at both of them and make them angry. And so now they just turn, and so they have a common enemy on him. And when they just turn and he goes, ah, crap, that didn't work. And it's like, ah, now we're outnumbered by like 10 to 1 or something. I cracked up. It's hilarious. And and like, he handles it so calmly, and he's just kind of like, eh, well, he kind of has this view of, we've had worse odds before. We've dealt with the Borg. We can handle a few guys. So So
yeah,
it was just so humorous.
Yeah, it was good, because especially because it had the classic, you know, Picard shows up right in the nick of time, like right as he's kind of about to, like, we got to give up and get out of here if we can. And but the Carrion and Delton ships are so close that they can't, you know, form a warp bubble. So again, we even get some techno babble in here that doesn't dwell, you know, it's just enough to keep the story going and, you know, the things that we like. I didn't care much that the Deltons were so, I didn't mind them being like an aggressive race or aggressive ship, or at least, but they're members of the Federation. And so like them firing on the Enterprise, even though they've got this quarrel with the Carrion, I don't know how else they could have dealt with that. I just thought it would have maybe gone a little differently, and that
there'd been more of than slap on our wrist. There would have been mm-hmm. hearings at,
well, or at, just like, you know, that they wouldn't have shot at the Enterprise or something, you know, because right, it's like you know, and I mean, I guess maybe they were a little bit you know, cocky, and we're like, oh well, we're Federation, so the Enterprise is going to take our side or something, but they were just as aggressive, and they addressed that. They're like, you know, they, you know, they're known for their sensuality, or, you know, whatever, and or their passion, I guess, and they're like, that even extends to passion for like fighting and stuff like that. Yeah. But so I mean, it worked in that way, but I was also kind of like, I mean, they became a member of the Federation for reasons, and now they're just gonna fire on their own people effectively, like, that wasn't as believable. But
But then in the middle of the book, we get to chapter, I believe it's chapter 7, which is just a really long chapter.
Is that the 50-page one or something?
It's 60 pages, okay, yeah. Just about. It's a long chapter, but that was like a big epic battle chapter, because that's the one where, all right, all the ships are in place, they've all ceased fire, the Iconians show up, and stuff does not go well.
Yeah. Well, and is this the chapter where we find out who they are?
Yep.
No. Yeah. So, like, we finally get an actual, honest to God connection to Susan Wright's book, where we find out because it's the Petra from the first book.
Petra.
Who were pretending to be the Kalandans in that book.
Yep.
And now they're, and you know, like, our crews are so smart. Like, Troy is kind of figuring it out. The folks on the Enterprise are kind of figuring it out. And you know, the people around Picard, like, everyone's kind of got this nagging feeling that, like, and even Starfleet, at the very beginning, they were like, something isn't right here. Like, why is this ancient race just showing up to, like, after millennia and wanting to sell their technology? And then once, you know, the kind of combined armada of the Federation and Klingons and, you know, other allies show up, and they kind of got the Iconians, in air quotes, dead to rights, you know, then it's like, yeah, we're the Petra, and here's what the deal is with us, and, you know, like, we need resources, basically, you know, and so we pretend to be these guys because we figured out how this technology works, and it's like, okay.
And I did like the plan that Starfleet has, which is basically, first, just get a pause on all negotiations, be like, hang on, don't do anything until we're all together, and then they say, basically, have a... they treated it like an allegory for nuclear weapons, which I really found fascinating. So they basically, you know, they realize if any singular group, even if it's a weaker group, like if the Federation gets the doors, I mean, it's just, you know, game over for everyone. But even if, like, one of the smaller groups, like, that doesn't have as big of a fleet or army or whatever, even if, like, the Tholians or the Ferengi, even if any single group gets access to the gateways, it is going to massively change the power dynamics and potentially lead to, you know, millions or billions of deaths or whatever. I guess David Mack could have played this very differently if he'd been writing this book. But whoever controls the gateways controls a lot of power, kind of like a nuclear weapon, as they say, all right, well, it's kind of nuclear, mutually assured destruction, kind of like MAD, that the idea that, okay, as long as none of us have it, none of us can use it. This is the reverse of which in MAD it was, let's both get nuclear weapons so that neither one of us wants to fire them at each other. Whereas this is, let's neither of us have this so that nobody gets to use the gateways. But the problem is they don't trust anyone. They're like, all right, we're all working together on this. But each group is kind of like, all right, when are we going to secretly negotiate? And so I really liked that because I spent the whole book wondering, oh, man, are the Petra going to are the Petra going to like secretly sell out to someone?
Yeah. Well, and man, that's a really good observation. I didn't put that together, but as you talk about it, like, that makes so much sense. And because even it's, you know, there wasn't a really a consideration like, well, what if we all had equal access to it? Because it's just like, that's just, yeah, now no, we're talking like, about more chaos again. And,
right. Yeah.
You know, we get a point where the Gorn have already, I don't know if betrayed is the right word, since they kind of played their cards, I guess, for their like, you know, we were in this to get the technology, not to help the Federation or anybody. But the Petra kind of saw through that, and instead of giving them the plans or the schematics or whatever for the gateway technology, they basically implanted computer viruses in their computers that destroyed the ships, which was horrifying to everybody. Yep. Like, oh no, like, so this is probably what's going to happen to anybody who negotiates even in what they think is good faith for this technology. And I mean, we gave a beat to the Gorn, you know, like, wow, all those lives. And then it was kind of like, I mean, but they were Gorn, you know. there was kind of this moment was like, I mean, like, I don't remember who it was. It was like Riker or somebody was like, I mean, this is kind of morbid, but at least the Gorn are off our backs. It's like, right, geez, yeah. Too soon. You know, the kind of all of the, man, like, the stuff with Picard and his negotiation, because he ends up having to like chase down kind of the leader of the Petra. It was like,
yeah,
Doran or something like that.
Doral.
Because I mean, we get this, the background story of the Petra, that they're kind of this nomadic race that are, you know, these kind of generational ships almost, that kind of go out, they look for technology, they send the research back home, wherever that is. And, you know, like, we're in a generation that isn't even really aware where their home is or if anybody's still around, or, but they feel like they still got this duty to do research and gather this technology and continue exploring. But so much time has passed that they're like, we don't know why we're doing this. We don't know who we're doing it for, but we're also like out of resources. We just need like money or materials or something. And we just happen to like be very good at technology. So we figured out how these gateways work, and having Picard be the one, I mean, there was really no other choice than Picard, not just because this is a Next Generation book, but just because Picard just seems like the natural choice to like be the one to go and kind of be the person that goes and meets and, you know, with them to not even negotiate, but just, he's trying to get them to shut it down, like, and throw away the key. And, you know, gets to the point where, you know, Picard has to decide, like, I've got to go figure out how to stop this, you know, like, and find these people and kind of put an end to this. And of course, you know, even Riker is like, it kind of has to be you, Picard. He's like, I'm not even going to argue with you on that one.
And then it ends with them pointing all the portals in the same place, and them flipping through a bunch of portals. And I was like, I feel like the next couple of books are going to end with the portals either being on one of the planets that it had been from or flipping to the portal that he flips it to. But they flip all the portals to the same place, the high domed building glistening damply in the sunlight. Mm-hmm. And he's like, all right, what's they all pointed in that direction. He went through. And of course, as you mentioned earlier, we got the clever in-universe reference to the final book, where the final line of this book is, Picard took two steps and entered the gateway without knowing what lay beyond.
Yeah.
And then it says, to be continued in what lay beyond.
Yeah, that was obviously an assignment for people to use that term to end their books.
Yes, exactly.
So I think even in the first one, the second one, like, well, they all ended with that, but like one of them used it a couple different times throughout, like, you know, when the gateway starts up and he can see what lay beyond, or, you know, things like that. But you know, before we wrap up, one of the things that we didn't really talk about that I feel like we should at least touch on is the conference that they have.
Yeah.
You know, when Picard gets to Earth.
With this.
Yeah, it was once again, this is where the Gateways concept is introduced to us, and we get this kind of big holo conference, basically.
Yeah.
With you know, Picard and Ross and some other folks are there at Starfleet headquarters, but then we get Colonel Kira and Commander Vaughn from the DS9 relaunch books that are on a holo communication, and we actually find out some information that Vaughn has had contact with the Iconian Gateways before, but we don't really get any more than that. So that was kind of interesting.
Probably going to be book four.
probably. Yeah. And then we also get some interaction with Mackenzie Calhoun from New Frontier, as well as Elizabeth Shelby from New Frontier, you know, captains of their own ship. And so we're doing this. And then actually later in the book too, there's kind of a call out to something that's happening on Deep Space Nine.
A crew from Voyager as well.
And there's a crew from the Delta Quadrant that shows up that had contact with Voyager. So we're already in this, what I will call the first book. Starting to weave these threads together to have a cohesive story, but like throughout all the books, and even tying in Voyager that's in the Delta Quadrant. They didn't have any part of this book except for this alien species that I didn't actually look up to see which episode of Voyager it was. I kind of had an image in my mind, but even just the stuff that they referenced that was happening on Deep Space Nine, it's like, I'll bet we're going to get that story, you know, like of them trying to shut down the gateways and, you know, among other things. And then I think the woman, the captain from the Delta Quadrant, even mentioned that one of the gateway outlets led to the Gamma Quadrant, and she name checks the Hirogen.
Yeah.
And something about like, what she if does. The Hirogen got it? And it's like, okay, so now we're starting to connect the Hirogen, the Delta Quadrant, like, in the Gamma Quadrant, like, you know, where are we going to go with this? You know, like, this is like only good things could come from this, you know?
Exactly. And also, it made me think, oh man, we're going to have to do another Voyager book of, hey, we have this way to go home. Nope. No, we don't.
No, we don't. Yep.
But at that conference, again, it was all the, oh, this is all the post-Nemesis stuff coming together. I mean, we're not post-Nemesis, but it's all the post-Nemesis stuff coming together. That made me excited. I thought you were going to mention something else, though.
Oh.
There is also somebody who's not really part of the post-Nemesis continuity, but shows up and connects to another book, and that's Scotty.
Oh, right.
Scotty shows up.
That's right.
And they even ask him, they're like, have you ever dealt with these guys? He's like, yeah, I believe they threw our ship, you know, 1,000 light years away, and they had to like come back.
990.7.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yes. Yeah. And then he talks about that. And I was like, ask him what happened to Kirk. Ask him what happened to Kirk. Because he says, oh, yeah, the captain disappeared for a time, but he does not explain it. And of course. Because this goes, they're saving it for the final book. But I'm in universe. I'm like, you would have asked what happened to Kirk and how you would have fixed it. Because Kirk is no way, like, So for the book, it's pretty obvious what it's going to be is all the characters, all the captains, whoever, are all going to be in the Gateways thing. They're going to do their thing and then come back. So in terms of in the books, we haven't seen what's happened to Kirk yet. We're going to see it in the final book. But in universe, Kirk has already gone there, experienced whatever he's going to experience, and come back. So it's like, just talk to Kirk. He's going to know.
Right.
Or not talk to Kirk, but talk to Scotty, who will, he will pull up all the old logs. Oh, what did Kirk say? Oh, this Gateway thing.
Yeah, and because it was such a quick thing that happened in this one, because he was there at Starfleet headquarters, and you know Picard even mentions like, oh yeah, because he's been working with the Starfleet Corps of Engineers, which is another book series that was just starting at this time. I mean, by the time the Gateway series ends, book 10 of the SCE books is. Yeah. Kind of an epilogue to this, and they're like doing kind of a cleanup kind of thing in that series. So I mean, like Scotty is, it's already been established in the books that Scotty's working with the Corps of Engineers, and because I forgot later too that there was like a comment about how Spock, like somebody mentions like, oh yeah, threw him 1,000 light years away. It was actually 990.7. And I was like, oh, I forgot about, like, that was mentioned multiple times in that first book.
And you know what this kind of felt to me personally was kind of like in Into Darkness when they call up alternate universe Spock and they're like, all right, how do we solve this problem? And he's like, I promised I wouldn't tell you this, but I will tell you this because it's important. That's how I felt this was. It's like, all right, call up Scotty. He knows the solution to the problem and he can solve this and make this a much shorter series.
Yeah. But they even say too, they're like, well, yeah, I guess, you know, it's not all a matter of public record. Like there's still some stuff that's still classified and we're going to have to see if we can get access to those records. And I think even Ross was like, sure, I'll get you access or whatever. But then nothing, we don't hear about
Ross is like, I'll add you to the Signal group chat. And
Oh, wow. That's a very, recent, very topical right now. Anybody listening to this, you know, 8 years in the future is gonna be like, what are they talking about? oh boy, that's funny. So anyway, yes, I think all of this to say, yes, we it's so great to get we know not every book is going to be a hit. You know, we know there's going to be some stinkers. Just that's just the, especially in this era of when they were pumping out like 20 books a year. But to get one like this is so refreshing.
Yes.
And, you know, like you coming out of the first two, you know, because I was like, man, I've read these before, but I don't remember if I liked them, if I didn't like them. Like, I don't remember them enough. And so reading this one, I was like, I am now excited. And it's going to be like 2 months before we get to the next book. But I'm like excited to get into the next book now, because this one, I think, did such a good job setting up kind of what we've been waiting for, you know. Like this should have been book one, and then
I agree.
I'm sorry, Diane Carey, but I don't right now, as we're reading through them, don't feel like chainmail was necessary. And maybe once we get further along, I don't know, maybe Voyager's gonna find something about that you know, species or something.
I'm going to say that I would have done this Narnia style. I would have done Doors into. This is just me extrapolating based off what I think the series is going. I might be wrong. So if you've read the book and I am wrong, okay. But I think you do Doors into Chaos. You do Demons of Air and Darkness, which, by the way, we got that name drop as well in the book.
Oh, big time! I think that's from the Next Generation episode. Which I can't think of the name of, that has the Iconians in it.
But we do the Next Gen, the DS9, the Voyager, and the New Frontier books, because those are all the same era, so they're all happening at the same time. Do those four books together. Then you do the prequel, which would be the little, you know, vignette of, oh, this is like the original series, how it ties in. And then after that, you do a big finale that is kind of like the last battle, but that's what lay beyond. That's how I think this series should have been laid out. I think that would have worked better if, especially as you said, if this had been book one, if this had been book one leading into another epic book with the DS9 one, I think that this would have been a great 1-2 punch. But I think a lot of people fell off reading the series because they read the first two and were like, I didn't like it. Like, I would actually legitimately recommend to people reading this one first. I would even though there's some references to the first book, I would legitimately recommend this one because I'm afraid if you start with book one, you're going to quit.
Agreed. I mean, and honestly, you lose nothing by starting with this one. I think the other two were fine. I mean, you and I were kind of bored in the first one just because it was like, what is happening here?
Yeah.
I think if I were to go back to reread it after reading this one, I would read it a little bit differently with the knowledge of what's coming, but also I think there would be some bit of letdown in it just because they had to be careful in that first one how much they, you know, reveal because, you know, it was really just a peek into the gateways, really. And even Chainmail, I'm kind of curious just how it'll fit in. But, I mean, they've already done with these books, with the Star Trek books. By the time this one came out, they had already done, like, Susan Wright had already done the Badlands books and the Dark Passions books, which both kind of use kind of all of the characters, like from all of the eras. And then we've also had the four kind of original Section 31 books, which came out, The Next Generation, then Voyager, then original series, then Deep Space Nine. I mean, I think they were all released like over the course of like 2 months. So there's like two books a month or whatever, but like kind of the official unofficial order is Next Gen, Voyager, original series, Deep Space Nine. So like they already kind of have done this out of order. And I think, with Gateways, what we're finding, I guess, is that like they didn't necessarily need to stick to the order that the series came out in or anything. I think that did do the first couple books a disservice just based on how this one was.
Yeah. But I'm excited to move into the next one. So, that'll be another month or so.
Yeah.
But, cause we have to wait cause we have something in
between. Yes. But, if you were to give this a rating, I'm assuming it's not going to be low.
No, this is a high one for me. It had, again, with the nuclear type stuff, I was surprised at the themes. I really loved the book. None of the third acts have been stellar yet. All three books have had weak third acts for me. The first two acts here were fantastic. Third act here was better than the first two books, third acts, that is. Mm-hmm. But it still wasn't on the same level for me. So it knocks it a little bit. So I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5. Nice. But it was still a great read. And I was rejuvenated after reading it.
Yeah, same. I mean,
I still loved it.
Yeah, I would go with a 4.5 for sure. And I mean, for me, the things that probably brought it down was the Troy storyline. The third act, for sure, to some extent, because I did, there was a couple places where I got a little bit lost on what was going on or who was talking to who, even when, like, Doral gave the Gorn
backstory,
some of that stuff. But, this even just gets high marks for how much hype I have now for the next one. And honestly, even just like the fact that having talked about it, like, cause at first I was like, I really liked it, but it was, I was kind of like on Goodreads. I was like, do I give this like a 4 or a 5? Maybe I'll give it a 4. But then the more I thought about it, I'm like, I need to give it a 5. And even now I'm like, okay, yeah. Like on Goodreads, this is definitely a 5. It's not, like, its weak points don't bring it down enough to, kind of knock an entire star off. If you're given just whole stars, it's just, you could say that Robert Greenberger understood the assignment, but
he
created the assignment. So I should hope so.
He saved the best book for himself.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, what a banger. And
exactly.
Can't wait to see where the next ones go. Well, like we said, it's always so good to get a good book to talk about. We don't like, beating on books or, you know, just kind of like cutting them down or anything. So it's really nice to have one that deserves all of its praise. Next time, you know, like you mentioned, we've got a little bit of time before we can get into the Deep Space Nine book because we've got something else in the works.
Yes, our next book will be Toward the Night by James Swallow, a new release from the Strange New Worlds line of publishing. I believe we will probably have an interview with James.
I sure hope so. If we can get the timing to work.
Yes. We will at minimum have a discussion about the book.
Yes.
That will at least be happening.
Yes.
So that'll be our next one that we do. So we're taking a break from the Gateways, which I think is actually a really good plan. Even though we loved this book, I think taking a break is a good plan.
But Jonathan, when you are not negotiating for the use of an intergalactic gateway technology, where can people find you?
I didn't know you were going there. Right. You can find me on YouTube, my YouTube channel, Jonathan Cohen, talk all things books, including Star Trek. I also have my Facebook page, my Twitter page, and my Goodreads, all of which are Jonathan Cohen.
And you can find me pretty much everywhere using the name Knitting Trekkie. I'm on most active on Goodreads. I don't watch many movies lately, but you can find me on Letterboxd and see what I watch there. And I lurk around on Twitter or X and Instagram, and I haven't even logged into Blue Sky in forever. I suck at social media. I'm sorry, but you know. Or you can find me on Facebook and the Babel Conference. I'm in there from time to time, so. But thank you so much for listening, and until next time, live long
and read on.
You call that light reading?
To each his own, number one.